coming to you live from our 6 satellite studios with our 63rd broadcast. Once again, we are coming to you from all over the place. Let's see, Jacksonville, Florida, West Palm Beach, Florida, Delray Beach, Florida, The Villages, Florida, that's near Ocala, Tampa, Florida, and Roaring Gap, North Carolina. Your hosts for tonight's broadcast are Margaret Bars, Bud Hescock, Howard Mucci, Neil Holland, Bill Joseph, Trudy Hart, Steve Thompson, Chuck Albright, and me, Jim Hart. This week's show, your host will bring you a real-life drama of heroic and courageous dimensions that even a radio drama cannot do justice. Our broadcast tonight brings some of the actual crew members on this flight to our microphone as cast to share the actual events of approximately 1 hour in flight. The date, Thursday, May 5th, 1983. In just a few more days, it will have been 29 years ago. But to those crew members of Flight 855, it seems only yesterday. If you have listened to our past shows, you know that we can be reached online during our live broadcast. Our numbers, once again, are 213-816-1611 or toll-free 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers, 213-816-1611 or toll-free 877-572-1861. Remember, when calling the show, make sure you press the number one button on your telephone if you wish to connect live with our show. Our sponsor for this show is Eastern Airlines. Let's enjoy one of their award-winning advertisements.
As it was 3,000 years ago, it is today. A land of artists reaching beyond to an ideal. Places that make Eastern Airlines what it is, the second largest passenger carrier of all the airlines in the free world, the wings of man.
The TriStar crew of Eastern Airlines Flight 855 from Miami to Nassau in the Bahamas was checked in at the airport earlier that morning for a very important reason. Captain Richard Dick Lodi had a reason for being there a little earlier from the rest of the other crew members. Today, for the very short flight of just 35 minutes, he had to prove to the instructor, who would be sitting in the first officer's seat and flying as the captain's first officer, that he was properly qualified in order to get the position as captain of this aircraft type as well. He had completed the ground school courses and the simulator sessions, but since then, he had flown no more than 13 hours in total in the flight decks of the huge Lockheed L-1011s. Out of 25 hours needed in order to be assigned in the captain's duties on that type, this would be the final hours before being on his own. In the briefing room, he also met the remainder of the two-person cockpit crew. They got the weather forecast describing the weather as rainy with fog at the destination airport. Nothing of significance, nothing unfamiliar. As soon as the briefing was completed, they left the building, walking towards the plane that waited for them on the tarmac. As they entered the plane, the flight engineer stayed behind, out of the plane, and began his pre-flight inspection.
Captain, I'll kick the tires. Make sure that all is well outside the aircraft. I'll confirm the fuel with the fueler as we see him out there fueling now, and we'll see you all on the inside in a few minutes. I've already done the cabin and galley check, and the maintenance logbook looks okay.
Returning to the flight deck, his partners, the two pilots, already had begun the checks and the preparations for the flight. Having 12,000 hours of experience in the air, the 58-year-old captain did not feel by no means uncomfortable, because entering the twilight of his career, he would have to receive practical examinations once more, this time in the left seat. The captain as well as instructor examiner, Captain Steve Thompson, 10 years younger than his colleague in the left-hand seat, and with almost 17,000 hours in his logbook, and roughly 300 hours logged in the particular type, discussed the details of the flight plan.
Okay, let's wake this big gal up.
Second Officer Dudley Barnes sat in the seat, in his seat, and with fast actions began to wake up the aircraft by placing the switches on his control panel to the normal positions for flight. Although he was the youngest flight crew member in the cockpit at the age of 44, he had logged more hours than the instructor, Captain Steve Thompson, in the flight decks of L-1011s. The flight engineer had 2,666 hours of panel time among a total of 9,000 in the air.
Everything okay, bud?
Well, yes, sir, Captain, and the walk around outside looked good. No write-ups that haven't been taken care of, and I'm ready if you're ready.
Let's do the before start engines checklist.
Roger, Captain.
Okay. Okay, guys, now that we've finished the checklist, I'm sure you all have been filled in on the purpose of this trip today, but let me go over our short flight today. Dick, it looks like we've got a beautiful day for our final checkout. As soon as we return from this short trip to Nassau, you can let me off and you can continue as a full crew to your destination today, Los Angeles. I got a short day, but I would just as soon be going with you guys to L.A. No need for that, because I feel sure, and I'm doubly sure, Captain Bodie would just as soon I get lost. All right, guys, just kidding.
Captain, I checked your logbooks, and everything looks as it should be. I'm signing this aircraft off. All I need is your signature, and if you will, just tear out the last copy for me to file in the engineering department. You guys have a great trip.
Captain, we finished boarding. Is it okay if we close the main forward cabin door? I've got 8:30 a.m. Looks like we're on another on-time departure.
All right, Shirley, you can close the door now.
Shirley Alexio, the senior cabin attendant, was employed for 14 years with Eastern Airlines, and apart from the cabins of L-1011s, she flew also the DC-9s, B-727s, and A-300s. She turned towards flight attendant Christine Osteen, who was standing near the front door, and asked,
Christine, go ahead and close the main cabin door. I've counted 162 passengers. Is that the number you have also?
Okay, Shirley. I've got the door closing, and yes, that's my count also. It's going to be a short flight over to Nassau, so we'll have to hurry our cabin service.
The engine startup was completed, checklist read, clearances received, and the aircraft started rolling. Just 4 minutes before 9 o'clock in the morning, the huge plane lifted off from runway 27 left at the Miami International Airport. According to the flight plan, they got clearance for flight level 230, 23,000 feet, with an initial heading to the south and then a turn easterly direct to Nassau.
Didn't take long to reach our cruising altitude, did it? 8 minutes. Steve, when we reach 85 DME out of Nassau, how about getting us a descent to a lower altitude for our approach?
Yeah, sure will, Captain. Miami Center, this is Eastern 855. We'd like to request lower altitude, please.
Roger, Eastern 855. You're cleared to 9,000 and contact Nassau approach on 119.85.
Roger, Miami, we're leaving flight level 230 for 9,000, and we're going over to Nassau on 1985. Nassau approach, Eastern 855 is with you, descending to 9,000. We're about 75 DME out.
Roger, Eastern 855. Report level at 9,000. We've got a 500 feet broken to overcast ceiling at the airport presently and with moderate rainfall.
Roger, sir, you can put us leveling at 9,000 right now, and we've got a good picture of the rain on our radar. We understand that you have no radar, so we'll give you DME from the airport.
That's good, Eastern. We do have a light airplane in front of you, but he'll be making a VOR DME approach to runway 32. And, that will be your runway also.
It was just 15 minutes past 9 when they received word the light aircraft was no longer a factor, and they were cleared for the VOR approach to runway 32. Their distance now from Nassau was 54 miles. They were now concentrating on and reviewing their initial approach procedures.
DME is distance measuring equipment. This system automatically measures the distance in nautical miles between the airplane and a certain selected ground station. The system measures the airplane to station direct distance, which is called slant range, and displays the miles to go on the captain's and first officer's DME indicators. Usually two systems are installed. The system measures the distance to the navigational facility by transmitting a pulse-coded signal, which actuates a corresponding ground station reply. This reply signal is received and processed automatically on board the aircraft to display miles to go on the captain's and first officer's indicators. A VOR approach, this approach is based on the VOR, which means a very high frequency omnidirectional radio. It's a radio beacon signal transmission, enabling the aircraft's crew to determine their position in the area in a range of about 200 miles. VOR approach procedures is a non-precision approach, which means on instrument approach and landing utilizes lateral guidance but does not utilize vertical guidance.
Captain Steve Thompson, in the right seat, was taking care of the communications, maintaining continuous contact with the tower, when suddenly on the front center control panel, a red light turned on. Low oil pressure warning the crew that the pressure of number 2 engine oil was low and below the allowed limits. This time it was real. Not a simulator situation event to see how the student captain would react and perform. This was a real event, which would occasionally occur on an initial check ride, but not often.
Let's go through the engine low oil pressure checklist. I believe it will tell us to shut down the engine, but let's go by the book.
You're right, Captain. The procedure requires the engine to be shut down. I'll go through the checklist. So you thrust lever to idle, start switch to shut down. T-tape on the center column of the engine gauge is moving towards zero.
While the plane decelerated and kneeled slightly, the number 2 engine was gone. Now they were flying with 2 engines, but the thrust produced by the other 2 engines was evenly distributed because the engines 1 and 3 were installed on the wings.
I'm going to push the throttle levers of engines 1 and 3 slightly forward in order to maintain our airspeed and altitude. Dud, continue every item on the emergency checklist. We're okay, but we have to make a decision as to landing here in Nassau or returning to Miami. I see we're about 50 miles from Nassau right now, so that means we're about 100 miles from Miami. The way I see it, Steve and Dudley, we've got some marginal weather here in the Nassau area and good weather back in Miami.
Well, we're okay on 2 engines for now, and the weather should still be good in Miami. They have rain here at Nassau, which we saw on the radar, and in the area. Nassau has no radar, if you recall, and there's a small plane in the area on the approach in front of us, which could delay us. I think we could be on the ground in Miami as fast as we would if we proceeded to Nassau. I think we should turn around and head for Miami. Do you agree, Captain?
I think it would be riskier with one-third of our power gone and in marginal weather with the possibility of Nassau closing because of weather than to fly back to Miami with good weather. Let's go back to Miami. Steve, give Miami a call and let them know we want clearance back to Miami. Dudley, crank up the APU just in case we need it.
I've already got the APU going, Captain. It was one of the items on the checklist.
Miami Center Eastern 855 with you, and we're requesting clearance back to Miami, and we're level at 9,000, and we are requesting 19,000. Over.
Eastern 855, just continue on the heading. We'll have you back on radar shortly. Did you say you wanted a higher altitude?
Affirmative, sir. We'd like to go up, say, 19 or 21.
Okay, Eastern 855, cleared to 19. After 13.6, turn to 270 degrees for radar vector to the Biscayne VOR. I've got you in radar contact.
The captain raises his right hand and selects 270 in the heading window of the automatic pilot's panel at the center of the instrument panel's glare shield. Meanwhile, Captain Thompson confirms, Roger, heading 270 to Biscayne. The captain pushes forward the two throttle levers of the engines 1 and 3 to higher power settings. The remaining two Rolls-Royce RB211 engines respond roaring with the extra thrust selected, and the aircraft raises its nose to reach the altitude that has been selected by climbing.
Something's not right here. These guys were descending into Nassau, and now they're asking for a higher altitude and changing course. Hey, Eastern 855, any problems that we should know about?
Yes, sir. We've had a precautionary shutdown of number 2 engine.
Say again, Eastern 855, you need any special handling?
Negative, sir. We're okay right now.
8 minutes elapsed from the moment where they had gotten the first warning of low oil pressure on the number 2 engine when the same warning from the number 3 came, and a few seconds later, the same from number 1. They all exchanged looks. Strange, all three engines could not have got the same problem. The flight engineer looked at his instrument panel and the oil quantity indicators. He did not believe his eyes. The needles of all three indicators were pointing at zero. The oil tanks looked like they were empty, but the engines are still turning normally. Thus, they assume that this is an indication problem. But it is not possible that the low oil pressure indicators are faulty as well. They don't want to accept this. They don't take it seriously. They are suspecting that an electrical problem gave them all these strange indications. Captain Thompson, in the right seat, quickly tuned his communications to the company's technical base frequency in Miami.
Miami Tech, Eastern 855. Do you read?
We've been Eastern 855. We've been notified and have been listening to your communications.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
My tech service, we have some rather serious indications. We have all three oil pressure and quantity indications on all engines reading zero. Now, we believe these to be faulty indications. However, this is their indication in a cockpit. Is there a common source electrically wise?
I would suggest you have the second officer check all circuit breakers in the CB panel.
Roger on that. And he's done the scan on all, and they're all in the normal positions. He found the suspect one, and he's pulling them out now and pushing them back in to reset just in case. Give us just a minute for that. Okay, Miami, we've had no luck. There's been no changes. Miami Center, this is Eastern 855 Heavy. We have some rather serious indications. We have indications of all three oil pressure and on all engines down to zero. Right now, we believe it to be a faulty indication since the chance of all three engines having zero oil pressure and quantity is almost nil. However, that is our indications in the cockpit at the present time.
Okay, fine. Why don't you turn right about 15 degrees? We'll give you direct to Miami. Maintain your present altitude or whatever altitude you might want. We're just going to have the emergency equipment standing by anyway for you.
The circumstances in the flight deck are not extreme since the two engines are still running, but it will not take long for a bad situation to turn into a nightmare. However, The hard truth is there. The right engine suddenly, with a loud bang, like a cannon shot, followed by a howl coming from nowhere, denied offering any more of its services. The parameters in the gauges as well are dropping to zero. The crew realizes that, unfortunately, the indications are only too true.
Binding Center, Eastern, 855. We have just lost our number three engine.
Okay, you've lost the number three engine, but you have the other two engines turning. Is that correct?
Negative, sir. We only have one engine operating now, the number one engine. We've lost numbers two and three, and we only have one turning now, and we're going to try to restart that number two engine. Hey, Dudley, let's dump the fuel down to the minimum.
Okay, Steve, starting to dump right now. Jettison switch, fuel dump switch, jettison down.
Miami Center does not ask further questions. Now what comes first is for the plane to reach the ground safely. They send away all the inbound flights. They do not clear the departing aircraft to take off, and all the emergency equipment at the airport are in alert.
Okay, fine. We're listening. Your career direct to Miami. Miami altimeter is 2989, and you can descend at your discretion to any altitude you want. You are cleared of all traffic.
Okay, now, and how about vectoring us direct to a west runway as you can? 27 left will be fine.
The squawk of Eastern 855 appears in the radar screen approaching the airport, and they have been switched over to Miami approach. They are left with only the number one engine operating and with the realization that it would fail soon.
Okay, your position right now is about 70 miles southeast of Miami. With that speed, you're 14 minutes out, heading 285 for Miami.
Dud, how about calling the flight attendants to the flight deck, and let's inform them that they should prepare the passengers and cabin crew for ditching.
Captain Thompson will always remember the look on the faces of the other two pilots and the three flight attendants who came to the cockpit. The color of their skin was stark white, as he was sure his face was, as a result of the adrenaline pumped into their bloodstream. At 9:33, they lost their one and only operating engine from an altitude of 13,000 feet and only the APU operating. They had no chance of reaching land without starting an engine.
Miami, Eastern 855. We're losing another engine right now, our third and last remaining engine.
Thompson's voice, as suited for a professional, is heard incredibly calm, indicating he is not allowing panic to conquer him. He knows very well that panic is the worst companion, particularly when flying. However, the most probable, Captain Thompson, same as the other two people on the flight deck, did not even have the sense of fear. Not because they were not aware they were in grave danger, but because things were unfolding faster than normal, driving them into such a high level of alertness that fear had passed into a secondary place.
Eastern Flight 55, Coast Guard is coming towards you now. We have placed the airport in full alarm, and the emergency plan is in force. Coast Guard vessels are heading out to you in case you need to ditch. You may also see a Coast Guard Falcon jet in the air to meet you.
Dudley, call the senior flight attendant up for a briefing on our situation and a possibility of ditching.
Yes, sir. I understand the seriousness of our situation. I'll go through the review with all the cabin crew regarding the emergency ditching and landing procedures. I'll come up and let you know when they've been briefed in our readiness.
She got a lump in her throat, her heart jumped, her blood began to flow faster in her veins, her nerves stretched. All these, however, did not last for long. Now it was time to do what she had learned during the training and the ground school, and no one believed that they will ever need to. She recollected all of her remaining feelings of calmness and came out from the flight deck. She assembled the cabin crew and spoke to them in plain English, reminding them their duties. Time was pressing.
So the captain is not sure whether he will be whether we'll be ditching or landing at the airport. I guess that means a full briefing of doors, flights, rafts, life vests, lighting, etc. I work with the other cabin crew members, as I was once an instructor for emergency procedures. May the good Lord watch over all of us.
Very good, Christine. Okay, I'm going to make the announcement. I sure hope the passengers will remain calm. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your senior flight attendant. We know that you're concerned about our present situation. However, please allow us to reassure you that you are all in the capable hands of our trained professionals. So please listen carefully to the following instructions. The captain has instructed your flight attendants to prepare the cabin for an emergency landing. Your crew is trained for this type of emergency. We'll be landing in approximately 12 minutes. With your attention and cooperation, we'll do everything possible to prepare for this emergency landing. Once we've landed safely or have ditched the aircraft, we will let you know if it's necessary to evacuate the aircraft. At this time, we ask that you please return to your seat and buckle your seatbelt. Please bring seatbacks and tray tables to the upright and locked position. Place armrests in the down position and open window shades. The flight attendants will now point out usable exits and exit path lights, which will illuminate to guide you to an exit. Identify the two exits nearest you. The nearest exit may be behind you. A life vest is located under your seat. Remove this vest from the container by pulling on the tab. Remove the vest from the pouch. Unfold the vest and slip the vest over your head. Pull the straps from the back and attach in front. Now adjust the straps around your waist. Do not inflate your vest until you leave the aircraft. The vest can be inflated by pulling down on the red tab. It can also be inflated by blowing into the red tube, as you will see your flight attendants demonstrating. A light will activate automatically once you're in the water. For those of you traveling with small children, the flight attendants will come through the cabin and assist you. For the brace position, please take the card in your seat pocket out now. Let's review the brace positions and exit locations on the card. Just before landing, we will tell you to brace, brace, brace. This will be your signal to take the brace position. You must remain in this position until the aircraft has come to a complete stop. The flight attendants will now demonstrate the brace position. Cross your arms, place your hands on the seat back in front of you. Lean forward and place your head on your arms. Place your feet flat on the floor. If you're unable to assume this position, lean forward as you can, as far as you can, and wrap your arms tightly under your legs with your head down. Practice this now as the flight attendants go through the cabin. Flight attendants will now brief those at the emergency exit. We ask firefighters, police, military personnel, and non-revenue crew members to please identify yourselves to a flight attendant at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, the flight attendants will now come through the cabin to ensure we're prepared for landing.
The crew's next task was to control and suppress the passengers' fear so that it would not turn into panic. Something like that could be catastrophic. Under these circumstances, what counts is what has been gained and acquired through experience and systematic training. With a cool voice, she explained to the passengers all the processes. This practice had some kind of certain results, but some of them are more than expected nervous. The crew members are dealing with them. She is checking for the crew to get in their right positions, and then she is giving the last instructions for the opening of the doors, the life raft inflation. Everything is ready. The engines are indifferently silent. The plane continues descending towards the ocean. 10 minutes elapsed from the moment the low oil pressure warning light came on, and just a few minutes since the number 3 engine ceased operation. The huge airplane is just a glider without hope. The so familiar noise of engines was replaced by the creepy whistling of the air. At least they had electrical power, hydraulic pressure, and air conditioning supply. The APU is doing a good job, but is it enough? No, it is not enough to reach the airport of Miami if they do not restart at least one engine. The workload in the flight deck is incredibly high. The cockpit became narrow. Their mind is not clear at all. The fatigue of such overstress resulted in having difficulty thinking clearly about tasks that needed to be accomplished. They needed to dump fuel, communicate with the passengers, flight attendants, ATC, as well as preparing for ditching. The worst case scenario is the most probable.
Eastern 85, keep me advised of your intentions, and we will keep you on here as long as we can. Approach is also watching you at the same time. You're about 20 miles west of Bimini right now and 49 miles southeast of Miami. 12 minutes south at your speed.
The answer that comes from Thompson's lips is hiding between the words of realism that, however, give birth to pessimism. It is the hard truth.
Senator, we don't believe we can make land. Would you give us directions and point us to the closest land point, please?
This man from Miami Center can only do just a few things, but he is living together with them the agony of survival.
Okay, 855, just straight in about the best you can do right now and the way it looks here.
In the flight deck, three persons, and in the cabin of the airplane, 176 souls are face-to-face with their fate. The scale is loaded on one side with the harsh game of their fate, and on the other side with the crew's skills, but nothing more. Would they be so lucky so as to at least have the scale balanced? It is here that a clear mind is needed. After repeated unsuccessful attempts to restart number two engine, and after number one engine failed, Steve and Dudley once again go through the procedures to restart the number two engine in what may be their last chance to get the center engine back into service to provide the forward flight from ocean to runway.
Hey, Dudley, how are you doing now on a restart of that number two engine?
Steve, I'm not having any luck with it.
All right, Dudley, I want you to take that engine in-flight restart checklist and go through every word and do exactly what it says.
Steve, that's exactly what I've been doing.
Eastern Flight 855 continues its descent through 4,000 feet, and after an unsuccessful attempt to even don their life vests, the crew is sitting in their seats awaiting water impact. Steve turns to Dudley and says,
"Hey, Dudley, let's try number two engine one more time."
This time, they do not use the checklist.
Are you all set?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Let's see what happens. Hey, Dudley, I think we didn't open the isolation valve when we were trying on using the checklist later. Let's make sure it's open now. All right, here we go. I'm going to press the start switch. Hey, guys, I've got a green light and a start button. We're getting a start. Look at the RPM coming up. Man, that's great. Fantastic.
Looks like I'm going to be able to maintain altitude. I'm going to try to climb back to 4,000 feet. We don't know how long we'll have to use this engine. How about the low oil pressure light? Do we still have it?
All the engine number two parameters are looking pretty good except for the cursed number one low oil pressure light that doesn't want to extinguish, and the needle of the oil quantity indicator is still indicating stuck on zero.
Hey, guys, we're 30 miles out. I'm going over to Miami Center. Miami Center, we have an engine started now, and we believe we can make the airport. I think we would like 27 left with an option of either Biscayne Bay or a Miami International Airport.
All of them have in mind what they don't even dare to whisper. This one single engine will not keep running for long as well. Unfortunately, that one engine was intentionally shut down earlier. If they had left it running and being flamed out, they would not have been even half a chance to restart now. They try to send away the dark thoughts. The professionals in aviation fly until the last piece of their plane stops working. And that's what they are doing now. They don't care when it will stop. For the time being, it works, and it keeps pushing them towards Flight 855 salvation and theirs. The way to Miami is now around 20 miles. Will it keep working up to there? But now they are close to Biscayne Bay. They have alternative solutions now.
Eastern 855, go over to Miami Approach on 118.1. Good luck, guys.
Roger, sir, and thank you for your help. We're going over to 18-1.
The heavy plane slips under the clouds. They are approaching that well-known narrow strip of land, in this case looking like the land of salvation. The descent and approach continue. The lights of the runway are visible and are twinkling.
Give me landing flaps and gear down. We've got the runway in sight. Flaps at landing settings. Landing.
Yes, sir. Here comes the landing flaps and landing gear. And I see three green lights.
The descent is well stabilized. The single operating engine for the time being is doing its job very well, while the one from the left wing leaves behind a long trail of smoke. A few feet above the ground are left.
Miami Approach, Eastern, 855. We're in pretty good shape right now. Well, we believe we've got it made. And, sir, we sure thank you for your help.
The passengers in the cabin are still in brace position. Some of them never realize how close they were to eternity and how close they are now to salvation. Others were, from time to time, throwing glances outside, waiting to feel the shake of first contact of the aircraft wheels on the runway. The cabin crew members are having the same kind of feelings. The nerves are stretched, all the senses being in alert. And a shake, some smoke from the tires kissing the asphalt surface of the runway. A short jump, a second shake, and the plane rolls on safely onto the runway surface. No other landing was better than this one for this crew. In the cabin, the passengers cannot hide their feelings. Sounds of clapping are heard throughout the cabin, and passengers are embracing each other and the crew. On the flight decks, things are slightly different. Silence and relief. But they have not finished their job yet. They have to leave the runway now. They are turning to the first exit available towards the taxiway. As soon as the aircraft stopped, the fire engines are shooting gallons of foam onto the left-wing engine, releasing thick plumes of smoke. Captain Thompson is thanking once more the people in the control tower.
Tower, sir, we want to thank you very much for your help.
Captain, the company is sending out a tug to bring us to the gate. They say it's going to be about 15 minutes before we can get it out to us.
No, Dudley, tell them we've made it this far, and we're going to let what's left of our power bring us to the gate. Let's see if we can get her moving with a little forward thrust on number two.
The captain pushes slightly forward the number two engine thrust lever. The engine roars and accelerates, but in a few seconds, it denied the energy needed to get Eastern 855 moving with a dry cough. It is the second time that they remained without engines. But now who's caring? Now they're on the ground. They don't have a grudge against engine number two. Apart from those few minutes ago, it had offered its duties and really saved them. It had kept them flying and brought them back to the airport alive. In the meantime, the tug arrived and it began to tow them to the stand, much to the chagrin of the captain. Captain Thompson picks up the public address microphone and speaks to the passengers in a quivering voice, a short announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your understanding and cooperation with our flight attendants during this ordeal. We'll be at the gate in a few minutes. Thank you again, and God bless you.
The towing finished, the ground staff positioned the steps at the doors of the aircraft, and the passengers began disembarking. Many of them are still wearing their life vests. They don't want to undo them. They wanted them as a souvenir of the adventure they had experienced. When the last passenger stepped out of the aircraft, the crew mission in the flight deck and in the cabin was over. Now it was time for the many questions that needed answers. What, how, and why? One by one, the three cockpit crew members stand up from their seats. All they felt was shaking knees and their legs heavy to move, as if they came through the whole crisis walking. It was at that time they had realized what had happened to them and how they overcame a most sobering experience. One way or the other, they had done a brilliant job. They were last to get off the plane, were met at the gate by the company's assistant chief pilot and the foreman from the line maintenance. The foreman made the statement to them that he knew exactly what happened. They were astonished, and that was the first time the term O-rings was used. 6 days later, Captain Steve Thompson meets with Captain Jim Bodie in Miami operations.
Hey, Dick, are you ready to finish up what we set out to do 6 days ago? We still need to complete your checkout to make it legal. And if I were to rate your performance, it would be an A+. But as you know, it has to be entered in the logbook, the completion of your 25 hours. Well, you've already passed the toughest flight examination of your life.
Let's listen to another Eastern Airlines award-winning commercial.
Eastern Airlines, another busy day. This day, 200,000 Americans will fly. One out of every six on Eastern. Eastern will service over 80% of America's industrial area and the capital cities of Canada, the United States, Mexico, Bermuda, and Puerto Rico. On this day, on any day, we will carry more people than all but one of the world's airlines. Eastern, an airline with a big day's work to do.
Steve, tonight's what cast went wrong on Flight 855?
Jim,
how come all three engines run out of oil at once?
Jim and Steve, before we answer any questions, I would like to remind folks that tonight's cast included the narrator was Bill Joseph. Captain Dick Bodie was played by Jim Hart. Captain Steve Thompson was played by Captain Steve Thompson. Second Officer Dudley Barnes, played by Bud Hescock. Senior Flight Attendant Shirley Alexu was played by Margaret Bars. Miami Center was Chuck Albright. Ground Engineer was Howard Mucci. Flight Attendant Christine Osteen was played by Trudy Hart. And Miami Tech Service, I was played by Howard Mucci. Jim, you have a question for Steve?
Yes, I just wondered what went wrong on Flight 855. How could all three engines run out of oil like that?
Well, Jim, I guess you first have to understand the lubrication system, the Rolls-Royce RB211 engine, which was on the 1011. The jet engine's oil lubrication system is classified as high and of similar importance with the fuel system. This is because the temperature, the rotational speed, and the forces and the stress inside a jet engine are enormous. Therefore, it is of vital importance to make sure that oil will be supplied continuously and normally to the accessory gearbox, to the spool, shafts, and the support bearings of the compressors and the engine turbines. Non-normal oil supply to these areas for a few minutes is enough to result in some bearing failures and subsequently to the destruction of the engine.
Can you guys simplify the lubrication system so a non-professional can understand it?
Well, Chuck, I will try. The lubrication system is a very simplified description. It consists of an oil tank and oil pump sending the oil with pressure to the spray nozzles, and the scavenge pump that collects the oil and sends it back to the tank. And of course, the circuit there exists many other units, like the oil-fuel heat exchanger, where the hot oil is cooled down by the cold fuel, and then the cold fuel is preheated by the hot oil. There is a filtering system that checks not only for metal particles by a magnetic chip detector, but also non-metal magnetic particles are checked at the filters. Findings from these filters and detectors are transmitted to the oil cockpit or to cockpit indicators. The manufacturers have installed in the oil return line small plugs that can detect the smallest of metal parts. Therefore, by inspecting and installing new clean filters at scheduled intervals, we may detect the non-magnetic particles as well. Based upon the evaluation and the examination and the results of these findings, it is possible to determine the condition of the engine. In the modern engines, in order to be easily accessible and fast removal and reinstall, the magnetic chip detector is fit into a cavity, so-called nest. When the master chip detector is placed in the nest, the oil flows around the magnet. Then, in order to keep the oil from leaking through the cavity, the nest, two small rubber O-rings are installed in special grooves in the body of the master chip detector. It is obvious that if these O-rings are not installed, the oil will escape slowly, resulting in the total loss of oil, engine oil. And this would be very similar to connecting a hose to an outside faucet without the ring in the hose itself. And therefore, when you turn the water on, it's going to spew out all around. That was the problem. So I remember the end. Okay, I'm sorry. That's Bud. You got another question.
We'll try it again. That was the problem. As I remember the incident, just two small rings of rubber. Amazing. Does it take long to lose all the oil as a result of not having them installed?
Well, the manufacturer cannot determine the time length. That was the engine oil system to be completely drained. But as did the Eastern 855 incident prove, only 15 to 20 minutes of engine operation are enough to lose all the oil or nearly empty the tank. And the same will also happen if these are destroyed or worn out, although if one of them is in good condition, it's capable not only to allow the oil to leak. For safety reasons, it's mandatory that every time the master chip detectors are removed and reinstalled, both O-rings have to be replaced with new ones in order to be sure that no oil leak will exist. The affected engine is run up and completely checked out for oil leaks.
Did they ever find who was responsible for not checking the O-rings when they were installed?
Yes, there were three mechanics working the night before, and they were removing these chip detectors for inspection, and they were replaced without the O-rings.
Hey, Steve, this is Margaret. I have a question. Looking at the Hudson River landing and the type of aircraft involved, do you think a ditching of an aircraft as big as the L-1011 would have been as successful?
I think so. We had ideal conditions that day, Margaret. We had almost calm oceans, and as was the success of the Hudson River landing, I think the 1011 would have come through fine. As a matter of fact, the fuselage hangs down lower than the airplane in the Hudson River, so it would have acted like a boat and have floated, I think, longer. Now, people have asked me about the similarities between what we were facing and that of Sully Sullenberg, and I can tell you that not taking anything away from the magnificent job that he did, his choices were two: flying into buildings or landing on the Hudson. That was a very easy choice.
Steve, the story we dramatize here tonight should be made into a movie. Were you ever approached by anyone for the rights to do such a movie or a TV story?
No, Jim, I was not. Someone did a fictional story and on a Europe TV station. I did not see it, but to answer your question is no. You've met the front-end crew in our play tonight. Now, what I would like to do now is to introduce the entire crew of Flight A-55. They are Chuck Harrington, flight attendant, Linda Palmer Scapetti, flight attendant, Charisse Cillen Hildebrand, flight attendant, Christine Osteen, flight attendant, Rafaela Medlin, flight attendant, Shirley Alexu, who's our senior flight attendant, Jeff Weinhold, flight attendant, Captain Richard Dick Bodie, and Dudley Barnes was the flight engineer, and of course I was sitting in the right seat performing first officer duties.
Great delivery, guys. Steve, I received an email from Lou Bodie, Dick's wife, and she said she hoped they would be able to listen to our show tonight if she was able to get into the show. She's been having some problems tuning us in. This happened in 1983, nearly 30 years ago. Let's see. Dick was 58 when this event happened, so that would make him, I guess, around 88, somewhere around there. He was unable to be with us on our live broadcast tonight because he's not been feeling very well lately, according to Lou, his wife. Let's wish him a return to good health quickly. This brings up a problem that many are having in trying to tune us in live to our broadcast. Let me tell you a simple and sure way you will be able to listen and participate if you desire to our weekly shows. First of all, go to our website. I would prefer that folks would go to www.blogtalkradio.com. with a forward slash Captain Eddie. We've abbreviated Captain CAPTEDDIE. And, of course, as normal, no breaks in any of these letters. There you will see an episode that will be broadcast that Monday evening at 7 p.m. You'll see at the top a red banner that has On the Air at 7 p.m. Click on this red banner and you'll be connected to the show. Not too hard. I would prefer that our listeners would do that in the future. And I believe you'll be getting into the show. Now, once you do go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, you will also see the episode that is on the air. And you'll be able to click on and be right into the show. There are also telephone numbers that we gave at the beginning of our show that you should copy down if you want to call into our show. And as Jim said earlier in our show, make sure you click on number one of your telephone handheld or your desk telephone, and that'll connect you, and we'll see that on our screen here in our studio. Guys, it was a great story, and Jim, I believe you're right. It should be made into a movie. Any questions for Steve and wishes for Captain Bodie, a speedy recovery of his illness?
Dick Bodie, this is Steve Thompson, and I sure do wish you well, and you just did a fantastic job on this flight.
I've got one other announcement that I want to share with you. We have talked with Mr. Floyd Hall again, and he's not been too well here, according to Paul Bousquet, and he mentioned that he has had some bad days here recently. So I would like to suggest that, again, since we're still in his birth month of April, and he was 96 years old, that you drop him a line and wish him well. Bill Joseph, are you still with us, that you can give us his address?
Well, I was not prepared. Hold on a minute and see if I can find it here. You guys, you know, I'm out here in Emporia, Kansas, and you keep dropping this stuff on me left and right.
Well, let's see. You check me if I'm wrong, but it is, attention, Mr. Floyd Hall. Some people like to refer to him as a captain, Captain Floyd Hall. He was a captain for several years
right.
with TPA. So I think he would be honored if you did address him as Captain Floyd Hall. I think he would like that. But I believe
that would be
number,
Care of the Mertens House, M-E-R-T-E-N-S House, 73 River Street in Woodstock, Vermont. And the zip code there is 05091.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Well, we're pretty near the end of our show, and I think I hear the music starting up in the background. And let's see, Jim, would you like to check us out for the night?
Certainly, Neil. Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We'll be back with you next week, same time, same station. www.ealradioshow.com. And like one of our popular commercials for Eastern, we have had to earn our wings every day, and we hope we are doing so here at the EAL Radio Show. Next week, we hope you'll once again fly Eastern Radio as we bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk with former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. when Flight 64 departs the gate. Please be on board. From all the gang here at our studio and remote locations, we all say together, good night, Eastern
family.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Luann, wherever you are also.
Good night, Jim.